1976. I received an invitation to attend a reception for a European cardinal of the Catholic Church who was on an American tour. At that time, I was a Protestant campus minister at a state university in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Stevens Point is a community that has a very heavy Catholic Polish population. And the invitation said, would I like to come to a reception for Cardinal Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, Poland, at such a time and place later that summer when he would be in town to celebrate a community-wide mass. The invitation was sent to area clergy of all faiths, so I checked my calendar and discovered I had an out-of-town conference at that time several states away, and so I mailed back my regrets that I would be unable to attend. Well, I didn't think anything more about this until about 2.5 years later, October of 1978, when John Paul II became Pope following, as you may remember, a very brief several-week papacy of John Paul I. And I read this, so I began reading the newspaper accounts as to who John Paul II was. He was, or had been, Cardinal Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, Poland. The name was vaguely familiar. I rewound the tape in my mind back a ways to realize that 2 years earlier I had missed whatever chance I'm sure I will ever have to meet a pope, a future pope in this case, face to face. So whenever it comes to what I might say to a pope, I had my chance and I blew it. I did wonder, as I thought back to that invitation 2 years earlier when I read that the cardinal had become Pope John Paul II, I did wonder what I would have said to him had we had a chance to meet at that reception there in Stevens Point, but it was all, at that time, of course, it was speculation. But 26 years later, Cardinal Wojtyla, Pope John Paul II, has passed away. A successor has been named and installed. German Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger has become Pope Benedict XVI. I'll say right off the bat that he would not have been my first choice, but then nobody asked me, since, of course, no pope ever has to pass muster with a Unitarian Universalist minister, and that's probably the way it should be. And to the best of my memory, I was never invited to meet Cardinal Ratzinger as I was Cardinal Wojtyla, so I don't have to speculate on how a conversation with him might have gone. His elevation to becoming pope, however, has given me a chance to reflect a little bit on my relationship as a liberal religious leader with Catholicism and what the dawning papacy of Pope Benedict XVI might mean for that relationship. I don't mean relationship, I hope you understand, in a personal sense here. I'm thinking about the place and role that Catholicism under its new pope will have and will play, both here in the United States and around the world. What role it will play as part of a larger communion of persons of faith everywhere and people of many faith persuasions. But I'll start with a personal. I don't know how much interest it would be to him, but if I were to relate to Pope Benedict, my journey as it has crossed paths with Catholicism, it would rather briefly go like this. I grew up in a setting, many of you have heard me talk about it before, a setting that was a bastion of Southern Protestant evangelicalism, where Catholics were suspect. Always said you got to kind of watch out for those Catholics. Never told what you had to watch out for, just that you were supposed to keep an eye out for. I never heard the Pope branded as the Antichrist in the church in which I was raised, but such sentiment was clearly there in the larger cultural air. Now, I know that since those days, Catholics and Protestant evangelicals have largely made their peace with each other. They found a good deal of common ground with each other, but I can tell you that was not the case in the American South of the 1950s. I got to college just as the winds of Vatican II were blowing across the American religious landscape, and this came at a time when my own interior religious landscape was going through a number of transformations of its own. I came out of college a religious liberal, which is certainly not where I was when I went in. And the religious liberal thing to do in those days, particularly for someone from my near fundamentalist upbringing, was to go on these ecumenical retreats where we Protestant and Catholic undergrads would share how much we had in common and come up with joint worship services that would include guitars and drums and stuff like that. And it was great fun, it really was. It was also quite unsettling to my father, who decided I was being seduced by the evils of liberalism. He was right, actually, but that's another matter. So that's it. My first real exposure to Catholicism was actually kind of a liberating kind of a thing. In seminary, I found myself shoulder to shoulder with Catholic seminarians and lay leaders, men and women, during the peace movement at the time of the Vietnam War. One of my more lasting memories from my seminary days was an evening spent in Father Daniel Berrigan's apartment in Ithaca, New York, shortly before he went to jail for some of his anti-draft activities. I remember sitting there and listening to him explain how his training as a Jesuit priest had led him to take the stances that he was taking. And from those days until this present day, I've been pleased to make common cause with Catholic individuals and congregations when it comes to certain issues of social justice. I'm pleased that we in this congregation can work in partnership with some of the Catholic congregations in southern New Hampshire through the Granite State Organizing Project in seeking to improve the quality of life in this region when it comes to things like health care, affordable housing, and fair employment wages. So for all these reasons, I consider myself Catholic friendly, and I regard the new Pope in this spirit. Now, practically speaking, I know I better be Catholic friendly since most of my in-laws are good Catholics. And on a serious note in this regard, I was, in fact, very honored several years ago when I was asked to offer the eulogy at the funeral mass for my mother-in-law in Yonkers, New York, and I was able to do so at the invitation of her family's very kind and generous priest. Much of my relationship with Catholicism then has been with the dimension of this faith that kind of leans towards the universality of religion itself and seeks to channel the energy of faith toward the ends of peace, towards the alleviation of human suffering, and the advancement of social justice and the common good. Remember back to last week, some of those things I read about from Jimmy Carter's Nobel Prize address about the positive role religion can play in the world. That's largely been my exposure to Catholicism. My hope is that Pope Benedict will hold that dimension of Catholicism high. Whether he will or not, of course, remains to be seen. And I'm also aware that Catholicism, like most other religions, has its shadow side. During my years in this liberal religious ministry of ours, I listened to my share of rather unsettling stories. Psychological and emotional damage done to persons who were made to feel inferior or worthless or laden down with guilt because they would not or could not follow certain practices or doctrines. I've become aware that the phrase recovering Catholic is not just a cute or snide phrase. It gets used that way sometimes, but beyond that, it can speak to some very real issues in people's lives that they are still trying to overcome and get beyond. I've listened to gay and lesbian persons who are made to feel deep shame for just being who they are, since who they are is supposedly antithetical to the teachings of the church. That tragic phenomenon is hardly limited to Catholicism, of course. On a less intense level, we get a number of our members from the ranks of those who have come to feel disaffected from the church due not just to beliefs a person finds difficult to accept, but due to its attitudes towards women, particularly when it comes to matters like birth control and abortion. And to move to a more global level, there is no question that want, human need, human suffering, as I've already alluded to, have been greatly alleviated, greatly relieved by the relief and development efforts of Catholic agencies around the world and in Catholic parishes around the world. It's also true, however, that the spread of AIDS, especially in Africa, has been accelerated in part by the Church's opposition to the use of condoms. And for all the positive remarks that can and likely will be attributed to the papacy of John Paul II, I think that from an American perspective, at least, the thing he'll be most faulted for was his somewhat muted response to the issue of sexually abusive priests and his providing sanctuary, in effect, to an American cardinal who knowingly moved pedophile priests from one parish to another in the Boston area. So these, in part, of the highly mixed bag of thoughts I have in witnessing a new pope assume his office. His faith communion, of course, is not mine. If it were, I certainly wouldn't be here. But I am a religious leader in a liberal religious movement, and I seek, to the extent that such can be had, a congenial and a collegial relationship with those of Pope Benedict's faith and faith communion. He's only, at this point, 2 or 3 weeks into his papacy, so I don't know what is in store for Catholicism in America and worldwide under his leadership. I do know something of his past, as most of us do. I know that while the faith of Catholicism worldwide for the past quarter century has in good measure been the friendly, good-natured, good-humored, generous, loving, and courageous faith of John Paul II, it's true that hovering just a couple of steps behind him, though, was his enforcer, Cardinal Ratzinger. With apologies for a worn-out metaphor, but one that still works, Cardinal Ratzinger, for close to 20 years, has kind of been the hard fist inside the Pope's velvet glove. Or, to use yet another well-worn analogy, and with absolutely no disrespect intended at all, John Paul II and Cardinal Ratzinger have had a very well-functioning, kind of good cop, bad cop arrangement in place for the many years that they have worked together. The interesting thing now is that the Cardinal has been put in a position that calls for him to be the good cop. If and how well he takes on that role, again, remains to be seen. And my dealings with Catholics have been almost exclusively with American Catholics, which I've come to notice are something of a separate species almost within the Catholic realm itself. They, most of them, take their faith seriously, as they should. And they, again, most of them, revere the office of the Pope as well as the person who occupies it, as they should. But, and this is not exactly breaking news here, many American Catholics are out of sync with many of the Church's positions. Here's just some quick markers. Just prior to the death of John Paul II, a CNN poll of American Catholics revealed that 78% of them feel the new Pope should allow for the use of birth control. 63% think priests should be allowed to marry. 55% believe women should be priests. And more than half think that Catholic teaching should allow for a more flexible attitude towards stem cell research. Well, I don't expect Pope Benedict to find common ground with the majority of the Catholics on these matters. My question is, will he at least try to find some middle ground? Again, time will tell. My chief concern, actually, as Pope Benedict XVI assumes the leadership of Roman Catholicism worldwide, is not over how much rigidity or flexibility he will show when it comes to the doctrines, the teachings, and the practice of the Catholic Church. Because for all my opinions on these things, in the end, they're none of my business. To use a colloquialism from down where I grew up, when it comes to some of the in-house squabbles over Catholic teachings, doctrine, and practice, I don't have a dog in that fight. But there is a fight, if indeed it is a fight, in which I do have a dog, and this is it. One common thread, which you may have noticed, that's been running through several of the sermons I've given this past year, has to do with the place and role of religion in the larger workings of our nation and world. Last Sunday, in speaking to the Justice Sunday event put on by the Family Research Council, I said that the divide in this country when it comes to matters of religion was not between people of faith on the one hand and hard and fast secularists on the other. I think that's a false dichotomy. But rather, it is between those who take a partisan, narrowly sectarian, I'm right, you're wrong approach to religion, and, or, excuse me, those who see faith and religion in a more universalistic sense, and as a force and as a way of bringing together persons of goodwill from many faith communities who wish to work for the greater human and planetary good. That's where the real fault line is, as I see it, not just in this country, but around the world when it comes to matters of religion. That fault line is well described by Dr. Jessica Stern in her book, Terror in the Name of God, where she writes, "Religion has two sides, one that is spiritual and universalist, and the other that is particularist and sectarian." It's So as the leader of one of the world's largest religious bodies, I think the question, the challenge for Pope Benedict that goes well beyond his church is, which side of that line will he seek to align his church on? Of course, he is going to uphold the particularities of his faith because that's his job. With how much strictness or how much flexibility he does that, as I say, is not an issue for that I feel I need to be caught up in. For one thing, I have a feeling he's going to be hearing it from American Catholics enough that the last thing he needs is a Unitarian Universalist butting in. So I'll leave that for them to work out. But the face of Catholicism that the Pope showed to the larger religious and secular world is crucial. And that is something I feel persons of any and all faiths around the world have a stake in. In a world where that particularist and sectarian side of religion to which Dr. Stern refers is becoming increasingly strong and increasingly dangerous, the best thing that Pope Benedict XVI could do for the whole global human community would be to use his position to call not only the people he purports to lead, but all persons of faith, to bring forth those aspects of their faith that advance the well-being of humanity itself and move beyond particularities in search of a greater global good. As strongly as I know he feels about fidelity to Catholic doctrine and teachings, I have to assume that Pope Benedict has the wisdom to know that the world in which he has now become a pivotal figure is not, in toto, going to come around to his faith. That being the case, then, the question and challenge for him is, how will he use his faith for the greater good of the world when it comes to peace, liberty, and justice for all? I know a number of Catholics who have that kind of vision. I hope this Pope shares it with them. Will he bring his voice and the voice of his religious body to the larger conversation of persons of faith in calling us from our brokenness, from our folly, from our fallen selves that gets manifested in so many ways, to greater levels of wholeness and to greater levels of reconciliation? I know and I respect the fact that Pope Benedict has his own canon of truth to uphold, but the larger truth is that revelation is not sealed, that new truths are waiting to be discovered, and new light is yet to shine. Even as he stands within his own tradition, will this new Pope also make way for new truths and new light? While my faith is not his faith, I am ready to join him and all those that he leads in keeping that universal light, that light of ages and of nations, aglow. Let's sing about that together. Number 189.